Bobbig.
Hello everybody and welcome to the talk of Franz Thomas about leveraging to algebraic data types. Franz is originally a physicist and works as a consultant and software engineer at TNG Technology Consulting in Munich. And he loves functional languages and expressive type systems. Let's listen to his talk and enjoy.
Thank you. So as a consultant, usually I have to use the tools, languages that that the client has or provides, and the client wants. And so, although I'm very keen about functional programming and Haskell in particular, usually I can't use that technology directly at the client. So I'm always keen about how to transfer tools and techniques from Haskell, from functional programming, to the languages I actually use. And this talk is about one thing that I really enjoy about functional languages in general, Haskell in particular, which is algebraic data types. So. Let's start with, by the way, a quick question. Who is familiar with Haskell syntax here? All right, so most probably. So there's a bit Haskell syntax required, but apart from that, hopefully we'll get along without deep knowledge about the Haskell type system or Haskell language. So let's start. What is an algebraic data type? The simplest case of an algebraic data type, or one of the simplest cases, are enums. So the bool type, for example, it has two constructors, two enum constants, if you like. That's true and false. So a value of type bool can either be true or false. There are more complex variants of algebraic data types, like, for example, the maybe type. Maybe to some, this may be known as the optional type with absent and present in Java, or the option type with sum and none in Scala. Basically, it's the very same same concept. And there you also have two variants, nothing and just. But in this case, the just is not an enum constant, but rather a so-called constructor that takes a value of type A and produces a value of type maybe A. And there are also different types, like the pair type, where you don't have two different constants, but rather one constructor that takes two values. And you also can mix those two, like, for example, the list type. So this is, I'm not using the native Haskell list type, but rather I'm writing my own list type here. And we have two constructors, that's nil, again, doesn't take any value, that's the empty list. And we have cons, the list constructor that takes a value and a list, and appends this value to the list, so it creates a new list from a value and the rest of the list. Why are those data types called algebraic? Because, well, an algebra in mathematics is basically something, in layman's terms, where you can add and multiply. And if you see these options here, true or false, basically is one option for true and one for false, so you have plus. This type is like a plus. Here for maybe, you have all the values of nothing, so that's only one, and all the values of just, and that's everything that A provides. So it's one plus all the values of A. For pair, you have multiplication. You have all the values of A times all the value of B, so it's the Cartesian product, basically. And here you even combine those two, so you have addition and multiplication in one. So that's why they're called algebraic. But basically, you can forget about this algebra thing. And so let's just roll with these examples. These are the four examples I'm going to use throughout this talk, so especially maybe. I will leave this on for a few more seconds, and then we're going to start. By the way, if there are questions, so small questions, let's just do them directly during the talk, so this is a bit more interactive. If you have a large question or you want to discuss something, then we should do it at the end. Right. So, what I usually use are, in client projects, are object-oriented languages. And in OOP, you also have data types, of course. They are called classes. And a class actually has four purposes, or it does four things at once. It defines a type, it defines a data structure, it defines operations on that data structure, and it scopes. And let's use a small example for that. So if I declare a class called pair, for example, then that induces a type. So you can't have, in Java, for example, you can't have a type without declaring a class. This class can have fields. This is the data associated with a type. And you have operations, so methods. They are defined the behavior of the class, and they can operate on the fields and the data of the class. So you can't have a class without fields, you can obviously not declare any fields, but there is no distinction between the data of a class and the operations in a class. Although you have patterns where you have value objects that only use fields and behavioral services that hopefully don't have any state, basically there is no distinction between these two. And we have the curly braces around all of this, so the class also defines a scope for these fields and the operations, and in that way it provides information hiding. Now, in functional programming, we have a very different approach. Algebraic data types, they separate all of these four concerns. So, for example, a data type declaration for a pair, it has a type constructor, a type declaration, but doesn't have any data a priori. So everything left from the equals sign is just the type declaration. And to the right, we have the so-called constructors. They are the data structure. In Haskell, you can have types without data. These two concepts are, or you can induce new types without declaring a new data structure. So these two are separated. And what's even more, the operations are completely separated from the data declaration. So they can be even defined in a totally different module. And also the scoping is totally independent from data types. Scoping is usually done in a module system, so scoping and information hiding. It's done in a module system, so you can have multiple data types within one module, or not have any data types in the module at all, so they're totally uncorrelated. Now, this has a few advantages. Why would I want to use it? Decoupling operations from types has some advantages. That means you can induce new types without always having to create a data structure alongside. Also, decoupling data from types, same thing. The separation between data and operations, and in particular the extensibility that comes with it. So if in OOP, if you want to extend a class, if you want to add an operation to a type, then you always have to derive from that class and then use a new type, which you probably don't want. And that leads to all the casting you usually do in OOP, because you extended something, you added behavior, but someone is typing on the base type, so you lose the information of those additional operations, even though it's actually there. So you kind of tell the compiler, I know what I'm doing, I know that it's this subtype, except for when it isn't, and you get class cast errors, obviously. So, yeah, of course, a few disadvantages come with it as well. In particular, in order to make operations extensible, you have to expose internal structure. So in the Java example, here we have we did encapsulate and hide the implementation details, whereas in the Haskell example, we exposed it so that everybody could use the internal structure.
But you could make it private.
Yes, I could make it private to the module, of course. Then I'd also lose the extensibility to a certain amount.
That's right.
Yeah. Now, the true power of ADTs actually comes from pattern matching. So you can not only create an instance of an algebraic data types using the constructors, but you can use the constructors also to decompose it. For example, we could write a function called if-then-else, and it takes three parameters, a Boolean expression, an expression that's to be evaluated if it's true, and one for false. And we match on the Boolean expression, check whether it is true, then we evaluate the then expression, or when it's false, then we evaluate the else expression. So basically you can write if then else as a function as opposed to a language construct. In Haskell, this function actually exists and it's called b, simply with a small, not capital, but small b. Another example for maybe, you can write something like or else. So you have a maybe, you want to extract a value, but in the case you have nothing, you need to provide a fallback. So you have a maybe thing and a fallback, and if the maybe thing is nothing, you don't have anything, then you return the fallback. If you do have something, then you can just return it. So you have this, with ADTs, you have this kind of duality. You have the constructors that create values of a type, and you have the patterns. And the patterns are directly induced by the constructors, the patterns that decompose the type. And we can use this. So I'm giving you a preview of what we want to achieve. In a totally different language, in TypeScript this time, just encoding the same type maybe, but as an algebraic data type, but in a different language. And then I'm going to explain it, how to get there, how to derive this, how to motivate this. So we declare an interface, so that's a type. We have a function called match, that's the decomposition. And then we have two functions called nothing and just. Those are the constructors. And now I've declared the type, constructors, and now I can add operations. And this is by declaring a class, for example, adding the or else function. And now we have something that looks very much like pattern matching. Namely, we have this match function, and we have a pattern for nothing and a pattern for just. And we give this function a fallback if we have a thing, then we return the thing, just, or we have nothing, then we return the fallback. So it's exactly the same for client code, and there's a bit more code for the for encoding the maybe type, but for client code, it looks very much the same, except for a bit more, well, a few more curly braces, a few more parentheses, and so on. Yes?
Sorry, doesn't this evaluate fallback always? Like, the Haskell version is, doesn't, I think.
Yes, it does. You could add a supplier here.
Yeah.
So a function that but we are already in a strict language, right? So we during pattern matching we have the possibility to be lazy, but this function isn't. It's just this function that isn't lazy. The concept itself can be made or can be used in a lazy way. Yeah, so how do we arrive there? How do we motivate this? So in functional programming, we have a thing called Scott encoding. That's one possibility to use lambda calculus to encode algebraic data types in a way where you don't actually need algebraic data types, so you don't need them as a language feature. You rather can just pull them out of thin air, basically. And so let's look a bit at the internal structure of this maybe type. So declaring a data type maybe induces two functions called nothing and just, and these are basically just functions that, so nothing is a function that doesn't take any arguments, it just returns a maybe A. It is a constant of type maybe A, whereas just is a function that takes an A and returns a maybe A. And in the standard Haskell standard library, there's also a function called maybe. So like the type, just with a small m, lowercase. And this also takes three arguments, actually. The first one is something, is just a constant. The second one is something that takes an A and returns something of type R. And if you compare this, then you have the R and the A to R here, and you have maybe A and A to maybe A here. So this first argument kind of is the same, or it could take the nothing. The second one could take the just as an argument. And I've kind of named the parameters already in a way that, well, in a very suggestive way, that basically this nothing here, this first parameter, is the thing you do in case you have nothing, and the just is the thing you do in case you have the just. And this is called it's the pattern matching encoded as a function. So it's the Scott decoding of the maybe type. And those two are kind of dual to one another. So if you use the maybe function on nothing and just, then it's just the same as doing nothing. You can literally see it here. If you have maybe, nothing, just, so for the lowercase nothing here, you insert the uppercase nothing, so it returns just the same thing, and here exactly the same. So you've written an identity function that just returns the same as its, so the same thing that you put in comes out. So that's the duality between those two. Every ADT, every algebraic data type, has this kind of dual representation, this elementary decomposition. So if you've just seen it for maybe, for the bool, it's very simple. You have true and false, the constructors. You have two arguments, one for true, one for false, and we return either one, depending on what we put in.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Just the previous example with identity.
Yeah.
I think it's also different because of the forced evaluation.
Yes, it's different because of laziness. Yes, we're going to ignore laziness
okay.
Or non-strict evaluation for the entire talk. But yes, so this I should say that this triple equal sign is kind of it's up to bottom, up to non-strict evaluation and so on. Well,
where was I?
Yes, and you may recognize here that this bool function, so in the Haskell standard library it's called bool. It's the same thing as the if then else we just had before. For a pair, we have the very same thing. We have a function that takes something that looks very much like this pair constructor function, takes this function and, well, it pattern matches on the pair, returns and applies this function to the arguments. Same thing for lists. If you already know a bit of Haskell, you may notice that this looks very much like fold, except for one thing. It has a list here instead of the R. So Scott encoding is very, very, very similar to folds. It just handles recursion differently. So all of these functions are actually in the prelude, partially even with the same names. This one isn't in the prelude, but fold is, and it just handles recursion differently. So how can we leverage this? How can we use this in other languages? Well, we can reverse the construction. For normal ADTs, you declare a data type, you declare constructors, and use those constructors for decomposition. With Scott encoding, you do it the other way around. You have the decomposition, and you create constructors from the decomposition. And the good thing is, we only require type lambda calculus, and most modern languages actually provide this. So every language that has a type system and has lambdas in one way or the other can use this. So let's start. We start with the maybe type, as before. We add a method to decompose it, and like we used before, we have one function that is called when we don't have anything, one that is called when we have a thing, and we both functions can return something, and when we call either of them, then we simply return the result. This is the elementary decomposition. Now the constructors look like this. If in the nothing case, so I take those two functions and I return nothing. So I call the match nothing function. I just prefix everything with match in TypeScript because there would be a name clash. In Haskell, we don't have a name clash between constructors and deconstruction because one is uppercase, one is lowercase, and they populate different namespaces. In TypeScript, we can't do that. And the just function takes a thing, and we only use the match just function to apply it to the thing. And in the duality between those two is the very same. So if we create a just type, a just value, and match it with the nothing and just constructors, it returns the same thing. And if we take the nothing constructor, match it with nothing and just, we get nothing back. So we've done the very same thing as in Haskell, just using a totally different language, implementing a few more lines of code, and it's the same thing. Now, the problem is, of course, it's called Scott encoding. It's a concept from computer science, and you probably wouldn't want to use it in a base maintained by, well, people who only know object-oriented programming, and they don't want to hear about Scott encoding and algebraic data types. But luckily, we have a different way to approach this. And this different way is very much object-oriented. It's from the infamous Gang of Four book called Design Patterns. And in this book, there's a pattern that looks very similar to this, and it's called the visitor pattern. Well, I'm not sure how familiar you are with the visitor pattern, so I'll just give you a short overview. We're actually going to use the same data type. So what the visitor pattern does, or where it's usually used, is syntax trees. To traverse syntax trees, you need to do a lot of, you need to know which instance of a type you're currently handling, and for that the Gang of Four describes the so-called visitor pattern. We have an interface that's basically the type of your abstract syntax tree, and this every instance of this type should accept a visitor, and we have also another interface that's called visitor, and this one has different methods for all the possible instances of your type, and that can visit those different instances. And then, of course, we need implementations. So this maybe interface has two implementations. One is called nothing, one is called just. And the nothing class always calls the visit nothing function, the just class the visit just functions. And if you, yeah.
Oh, why the name visit, by the way? I don't know. Can you explain why is it called
visit?
Or visit or,
why is it called visitor? It's usually used for syntax tree traversals, and in syntax tree traversals, you usually want to you traverse the tree. You have the notion of nodes and sub and children of nodes, and basically you want to do something with every single node. And the term that they coined for that is visiting that node.
So you visit the value of the node, and
yeah.
Okay.
I kind of drop by the node, do something with the node, move on to the next node, and that's simply called visiting.
Okay, thank you.
So if you think this looks familiar, then let's put the pattern that I just proposed to the other side. So we, in our pattern, we have also a visit nothing function, a visit just function, just that in this case, those two are lambdas. And structurally, you see, it's the very same thing. You just introduce, a type called, an interface called maybe visitor with two functions. Here you just pass two anonymous functions. So it's worth noting that this pattern comes from a time where lambdas weren't available, whereas today you simply, so at that time you weren't able to encode this, but now you can do it using lambdas. And the implementation is also almost the same, except for here you have classes. Classes have the disadvantages that they induce types. You don't want to have a type for nothing. The only way you can decompose this type is via pattern matching. Whereas if you have a nothing, then if you have a nothing type, then you always can type hint against it, and you run into class casting or instance of, and you don't want that. So we declare those constructors as anonymous types, and this way it's impossible to match against those constructors except for using this this function. So let's shortly describe it in a more formal way. So put next to each other, we declare, the first thing is to declare a type using decomposition. In Haskell, you would declare a type using the constructors. In TypeScript or other languages, you use the decomposition of that type. A apart from that, it's just declaring a type and, well, the constructors that you want to use. The next thing is to declare the constructors themselves. So in Haskell, still the same declaration, because you declare them in one go. In TypeScript, you declare those two functions. One calls match nothing, one calls match just, done. And then you can immediately profit from this. So all the functions that you can write in Haskell using the pattern matching on that type, you can write in other languages as well. The is nothing function that just tells you whether a maybe is nothing or not. Well, you match nothing, you match just, return false and true. You match nothing, you match just, return false and true. I formatted it that way so it actually, so you can actually see the different, so it really looks like the pattern matching itself. You can, so it also kind of depends on what kind of code formatting you use, of course, that it looks really similar to the original Haskell pattern matching. Same thing for the or else function, for example. You have, in a nothing case, you return the fallback, in a just case, you return the thing. The only thing is that you don't have the named nothing and just constructors. They are just, but they are kind of implicit. That's the only difference. So let's move on to another example. One type that I have actually implemented a lot of times because the either type basically encodes the possibility of failure. You either have a left thing, that's usually some kind of error, or you have a right thing. The right thing, you have what you actually want. And this is very useful because in most object-oriented languages, you have exceptions for exceptional errors. But not all errors are exceptional. A lot of errors are actually kind of expected. And for those to use exceptions for those expected errors often is more tedious, especially in systems that should be designed to be resilient. But then you end up with an uncaught exception that you should have caught but didn't, and then it falls through and your application crashes.
This is more the more important aspect about this is that you're not forced to catch the exceptions.
Yes, yes. Yes, because they are for exceptional circumstances. And with the either type, you directly communicate that you are actually, that you have to deal with this case. It's not exceptional, it's expected. It is expected. And the either, so you have the left and right constructors, the left and right patterns here. You have then you have the left and right constructors defined by the pattern matching, and then I need my mouse. And then you can add the use my mouse on the correct screen. And then you can define functions like is left, is right, flip, that just swaps the two, so it turns a right into a left and a left into a right, or mapping over the right value. So if you have a right thing, then it applies a function to it, and if you're a left thing, then it just leaves it. And well, the TypeScript code basically looks the same. It matches. If you have a left thing, returns true, right thing, returns false, and so on. So in usage, this pattern is very, very compact and very much like the original functional code. So I promise you in any programming language, which is, of course, not entirely true. Any language, you probably won't be able to do it. And someone asked me about Fortran, probably not. You need two key ingredients that you need interfaces or some way to declare a type without without much else. So interfaces are the usual way, but you can also use abstract classes if that's all your language supports. And the other thing is you need lambdas. You need some kind of anonymous functions. But if you have those two, and most modern languages actually support this, then you can do it in any other language, Java, for example. So the only, I didn't use Java for all the other examples, even though I've written most of those ADTs in Java, it's because function syntax is just horrible in Java. So declaring a function type, although the client code actually looks very nice again, looks the same. and you can, so C++ nowadays supports lambdas, JavaScript, TypeScript. Okay, JavaScript doesn't have a type system, so the point with type lambda calculus is kind of moot. But apart from that, any modern language will do. So in what cases should I use this? For most types of classes, you would write in object-oriented programming, you should probably not use this. But there are some applications where this comes in very handy and where I've used it multiple times. So that's, of course, those kind of standard algebraic data types like the ones I presented, maybe either, pair, and so on. It's very easy to, if you once memorize this pattern and can get used to it, it's very easy to write those data types from scratch within 1 hour. So I've actually done a similar talk already with live coding where I just implemented maybe and either within 15 minutes or something like that. So it's very easy to write. Then, of course, syntax trees. The prime application for the visitor pattern, and also one of the, the prime examples where Haskell really shines, syntax trees. I've also used it for parsed config files. So you parse, you have different alternatives for how you specify your configuration. You have a parser that creates one instance or the other, and when you evaluate that config file, you simply use this pattern to match whether you have, for example, whether you want to write to a file or to, I've used it for writing to file or Kafka. You just switch out the configuration file, whether you want to use one backend or the other, and the pattern matching will decide which backend to use. And then, of course, should I use it? Yes, for those applications, definitely. You may have to explain it to your coworkers, but luckily, both people with a functional background, you wouldn't have to convince them, right? Because they already know and love ADTs, and people with a background in object-oriented programming, it's a gamma of four pattern. It's called the visitor pattern, right? So they probably should know their object-oriented patterns, and so they hopefully are also easy to convince to use this pattern, or at least let you use it. And that's it for me. Thank you very much for listening. And I think we have 5 minutes for questions.
Yeah.
Yes.
Nice. Thank you very much.
Can you say something about performance? Because at least in functional programming, things like continuation passing style and so on can be speed up your code, because their function composition is cheap.
Yeah.
You just compose functions and that's O(1) basically.
In early Haskell, pattern matching was implemented exactly in that way, just under the hood, and it turned out to be too slow. In OOP languages, you have subtyping and you have virtual calls, and those are what makes this slow. But those are also what makes any subtyping slow. So there shouldn't be a difference between using subtypes for example, the maybe type with nothing with a nothing class and a just class should have the same performance characteristics. And that's probably why in Java 8 the optional type is actually not implemented via subtyping, but if the thing is null, then do one thing. If it's not null, then do the other thing, because it's just it's faster. Yes. On the other hand, probably you won't really have a performance hit that large. So probably it's premature optimization if you optimize for performance here. But of course, if your performance is really critical, then you also shouldn't be using Java or TypeScript, right? So next question.
One thing I could imagine would be a bit inconvenient is that you need to remember the order of the structures.
Yes.
So if you have four or five constructors,
yes. And you don't have named patterns as opposed to Haskell. Yeah, so it doesn't really work for syntax trees where you have a lot of options and a lot of options look the same, then it probably doesn't work as good anymore. You get some documentation from if you use an IDE and you name your patterns accordingly. So I always use match nothing, match just. I simply get the information from my IDE that I actually should match for nothing here, should match for just here. So, but yes, the documentation is not directly in the code, but rather something the IDE provides to me, which is good enough for me.
At least in TypeScript, you could just use an object as argument to accept.
That's true. That's true.
In
TypeScript,
that
I could. Yes. Yes. JavaScript. Sorry, it works in JavaScript as well, of course. Yeah. But you don't get the convenience. The convenience that you get from a static type system in JavaScript.
So
but yes, it works. Yeah.
As well.
Yes, you could definitely.
Okay.
Just
ask
a
last
mm-hmm.
I saw you.
Last question.
And there was this. It's totally not related to talk. It's a TypeScript question. This class extends. What does that mean?
It's an anonymous class.
Okay, it's a difference. Just an object type without the class extends.
Then you couldn't. So basically, the class I added is for extension methods. So I can declare functions on the maybe type as opposed to always declare the operations on the type externally. But it's a question of flavor.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Thank you.